Welcome back to Discourse, the weekly occult and esoteric podcast hosted by myself, Abamon the Great, and Dr. Anna Stone. This week, we explore the art of divination, how we understand it to work, how we use it in our personal practice and with clients, and the deeper, esoteric implications of this ancient and powerful occult skill. Breathe in, young magus, and let the work begin. Two, one. All right, welcome back to Discourse with myself, Abamon the Great, and I am joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone.
Hi.
Hi, guys. We've been absent for a while. For a few months. We've recorded a few episodes. All of them got canned for various different reasons. However, we're kicking things back up into gear, really excited. Obviously, we are in a new space. This is a large part of why we've been absent. Our lives changed in a massive way, both of ours.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Completely changed, yeah.
Just all at once, all a at bunch once. Of stuff happened.
Yeah.
So
when it rains, it pours.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not the bad stuff.
No, know? It was not. Yeah. So it was like, it was... I mean, I know personally, towards the last few episodes that we published or whatever, I was going through a pretty intense kind of like psychological thing. It was like a confluence of an initiation that I was going through,
right,
and the type of spirit work that we were doing at the moment.
Yeah.
And I was kind of derailing. But then it, like, we came out the other end, or we got out the other end into January, and then all of a sudden, you know, I finished my initiation and it was like the new year got cemented, and then a bunch of positive things happened.
That did happen.
Yeah.
Like right at the end of the year.
Yeah.
It's like we were able to close out the previous year and start new in a big way.
In a really big way. Brand new lives. So
yeah.
Yes. So apologize for being absent, but you know, we have our new dedicated Discourse space,
right,
and we're cranking back into gear, and I am so excited because we have so much to talk about.
So much stuff.
Yeah, yes, so much to talk about. So to get back in the swing of things, we're going to go over a little bit of an anecdotal experiential topic. It's not gonna be too research heavy. We're gonna be talking about divination,
right?
So, and divination is something that it's very important to magical practice, very important to the occult, and both of us love divination. It's a daily part of our lives, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Divination takes a lot of different forms, right? But I think the most notable and most popular, most, you know, used within, especially within the occult or mystery schools, is hands down going to be tarot, right?
Tarot, yeah, basically. Yeah. I guess like divination is like seen as a kind of entry-level occult skill, or like a baby occult skill or whatever.
Yeah.
It's one of the first skills that a magical practitioner picks up. And when you join a magical order, they usually have you learning.
Yeah.
It's usually the tarot.
But yeah.
As a neophyte, before you do anything, before you join a ceremony, they're like, you need to learn the tarot first or whatever. So amongst occultists, it's seen as a kind of like baby entry level skill. However, divination happens across all depths of practice. You know, it doesn't matter how adept you are. You're using divination so frequently.
Right.
Even if it is completely gotten to a point that you're not even using tools to do it. You're
right.
Just, you know,
true.
Divining out of the aether. But amongst, you know, academics and scholars, they look at it as some kind of like archaic,
primitive
curiosity of history,
right, that's not in practice anymore.
Yeah, or it's like there's this like tone that academics take because they try to be like so like safe and respectful and anthropological when they approach like tribal forms of it or whatever, but the way that they approach it, it's like in this condescending tone to where it's like, almost like they think it's cute or something.
Like, oh, yeah. Look at these little people.
They're like, you know, these tribal people have this like alternate way of living, and they believe in divination. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God.
You know,
dude,
but
like,
I think
that's so condescending.
I do think that that kind of crosses over into a lot of other people that are interested in the occult.
Yeah.
Actually, because I think there are a lot of, I'm going to say it, men that are kind of dismissive of divination because it's seen more as a feminine kind of tool and practice. I mean, I'm not saying you.
Yeah.
I'm saying in my experience, a lot of people have that attitude about like, oh, that's
like,
so
what
cute.
Kind of, yeah, but like what kind of men are in the occult that don't practice divination?
The ones that aren't really in the occult, but they are trying to be like edgy and think that they
like
want to be in it.
Scholar ones or
no,
whatever.
I'm talking about like the typical guy. Like when I remember when, you know, back like in high school and college, like
painted black nails.
Yeah. They're like, that's for girls.
Really?
Yeah. A lot. I mean, Fresno maybe, but like, you know.
Yeah. Well, that this was what, the 90s occult?
Yeah.
Or,
90s occult.
So yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even now, like I have a lot of.
They're all like, hail Satan.
So yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, but like a lot of people kind of look at it as like a kind of like the entry level of any kind of psychic ability, occult practice, whatever, but also kind of is like a cheesy version of it too.
Yeah.
And it can be. I mean, we all know like Miss Cleo, stuff like that.
Yeah,
right?
No, it's definitely it can be cheesy, it can be a party trick.
I mean, just going to a witch store. Yeah. Like we went and remember the other day we were at a witch store.
Yeah.
And there was a woman getting a reading and I was just listening.
Oh,
to
I accidentally interrupted that. I thought she was looking at me and I was like, hey, what's up? And then it was like, oh, wait, she's doing something. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That I was listening to it
because
I can't help it. Right. Yeah. And I was hearing what she was saying and I'm just standing there just like thinking to myself, cringe. Like it was so.
Oh,
because it was so it seemed very just phoned in, like it seemed like it was just going through the motions. Because let's be real, like a lot of professional diviners aren't divining anything other than using some kind of cold reading technique, right? That's really common, but this is not what we're talking about when we're talking about divination. We're not talking about getting tarot readings you know, from someone at some store or some festival or something or online.
Yeah.
We're talking about using it for the purpose of strengthening your own knowing and being able to hear the messages that you're getting when you're doing magic work. Mm-hmm. Right. That's why it's important to the practice. Not about, I mean, it definitely there's a component
to it.
The value is not so like, you know, if it's something that you kind of recoil at when you hear about it or think it's silly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, kind of unnecessary, then, you know, just a different perspective would be that it's not about that. It's about yourself. It's about connecting with your own inner knowing and ability to discern the messages you're going to be getting.
Yeah.
Coming up in any magical workings you're doing, right?
Yeah. So it's like within the magical orders, like it's the Golden Dawn was the.
Sorry.
System that basically codified for all the magical orders that descended after it. Basically your neophytes are going to learn divination. That's the first thing that they're going to learn. And they chose the tarot as their method of divination to learn. And basically this is training the intuitive faculty, because really divination is putting you in touch, especially when your intuitive faculty is dull. Like when I started Magic Mind, I considered mine extremely dull. And so I replicated the Golden Dawn training techniques at home. You know, I would meditate on a card every single day. And I remember when I first started divining with tarot, like I was very dependent on having like the spreads in certain positions and that kind of thing. And as I started to work, it started to become more of a, you know, gut instinct. And that's when the tarot stopped being like something that's like, oh, like, let me give you a reading. And that's when it became a thing where, or it stopped being like, hey, let me give you a reading. Hey, I'm going to ask it a question. It's going to tell me what's going to happen tonight. And it started being a thing where it's like, oh, I'm a little confused right now.
Confirmation.
And then I just like pull out the cards like, okay, that's what I'm doing.
Or, right. It's like know. It helps to confirm for you things, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily like, you know, tell you the answer to a question that you're asking like about something in the future, but maybe you're having something happen, you know, externally or whatever, or internally, and you're like trying to get a grasp on it. And so that's helpful to be able to see what's going on via cards, right? But it does take, I think, even to understand for yourself, it does require, I think, reading for other people.
It does. No, so I think, I mean, reading for other people is definitely how you get good at it, right?
Right.
And that's how you practice it, and that's how you hone it. And then also, you get to a certain point where it's like, you are so good at doing it on yourself that you can do it for other people, and you can do it accurately for other people. And this is like, herein lies like the kind of like stereotype of the diviner being some kind of marketplace charlatan that's scamming people out of their money, because like it is a skill that you can sell, and magicians are known and historically known. It's like, yes, I do magic. Yes, I can do magic. Yes, I'm a spiritual practitioner. Yes, I'm in touch with something, you know, but I can do something for you, but you're gonna have to pay me for it, or
right,
whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of like misunderstanding, because everybody is so used to like interfacing with spiritual practices through the lens of institutional religion or mysticism, to where it's kind of like looked down upon to, you know, kind of sell any kind of spiritual services.
Yes.
Right? And so it's this like weird thing. Like, people have this like kind of offense. It's like, if you're so spiritual, why would you be selling this to me?
I have an answer for that. So that is a common occurrence right now. Yeah. You shouldn't be charging for readings when you're practicing, because that's weird, because that's an even energy exchange. Yeah. You're gaining something from it yourself, which is experience, and the person is hopefully gaining some insight, right?
Yeah.
However, once you get to a certain level and you are accurate and you are able to hear the things that you need to hear, it is no longer an even energy exchange. It is now you're expending energy to provide for them, and they're not. And so the easiest way to mitigate that is via money, because money is a neutral, spiritually neutral thing, right? Like, so, and it's a, and if you don't have some kind of exchange like that, then now there's an imbalance of power, and that can, it's said to create, you know, some bad karma, right? So for the person you're reading for, not you.
Yeah.
So it's a way to even out the scales, right?
Yeah.
Like, you take from me my energy, and, you know, and which is far more than, and most of the time, a lot of people come with questions that they already know the answer to, and they're just like kind of in denial about it.
Yeah.
And they don't want to hear what you have to say. So for, you know, it's not like you're giving, and now this is when you're being honest, right? Like, about what you're seeing, and not just you saying what they want to hear, because that is, that's the bad stuff right there. But you do have to have some kind of balance there. So I, and also, churches make tons of money from tithings and donations every.
That's always been a point of contention. Like, historically, people have always said about the Catholic Church, like,
all churches,
you know, why you guys got so much gold? I mean, like, even like, you know, Dark Age peasants were like, something's a little suspect.
Right.
Here,
I mean,
you know?
So that's what I mean, is like, they say it's free, but it really isn't.
Yeah,
because they're expecting you to donate, you know, like all of the time, and people do. It gives them this idea that they're helping rather than being required, right? So, you know, and that's where you can say it's donation or something, you know, like, just the same. But it's one of those things where people are under the false impression that the things that they're getting from those institutions are free, when they aren't really free. They may not be paying for it, but someone else in the audience is, right? Or in the pews is paying for it for them. So it's not really different.
Yeah.
But it just is looked at. And I've heard that comment that you just said, that if you're so spiritual, like, okay, but it's just like with anything, okay? You don't go to somebody and be like, paint me a picture for free, or cut my hair for free. It's a service still.
Well, yeah. I mean, I never hear intelligent people make that argument, but yeah.
No, I know. It's always. I mean, I've had it a lot, like, and I do give out readings, right?
Well, I mean, for me personally, like, I'm very much a, like, time is money mindset. Like, true. If I'm giving you my time, like, I better be, like, you know.
Also, like, you know, you can't be spiritually healthy if you're dirt poor and stressed about money.
Yeah.
You can't. So, like, it's not beneficial for you to be a starving artist, so to speak, when it comes to stuff. It's not.
Well, no, I did that when I was a musician. You know, I did the romantic, you know, the romantic starving artist. And like, I was, this was at the end of the 2000s, early 2010s. That's when I was a musician. And this is when, like, millennials of my age were really into, like, libertarianism, especially, like, cyber libertarianism, because we were, like, very involved in online piracy and the online, like, black markets and that kind of thing. And and this is also when, like, every streaming services are first becoming a thing, and the conversation in the music industry is, like, you know, they're robbing us, you know? And so I'm, like, in the music industry, and I'm like, flying this Jolly Roger, like cyber libertarianism, and I've got this, like, idea of, like, I'll be a starving artist, you know, like this is for the this is for freedom, you know, this is for values and that kind of thing. And then I mean, like, you know,
six years
what,
how was your life,
you know? I was in my early 20s, so you know, I was broke and I was struggling, and it was hard, and I never want to do that again.
Right. Know? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. So there's no shame in that. Right. Yeah. But that's only if you get good, right. You know, at it for other people.
Yeah.
But that, I think also it's really hard to, like, discern what is your own imagination sometimes with the tarot. That's why it's important to read for other people, especially people you don't know, because that way you can test if you're punches or your hits are right.
Yeah, I really do not. I always feel dirty when I do readings for people that I'm, like, friends with or close with,
because, you know, because
I know exactly what you're going through, dude. Yeah. Like, there's no card, like, I know that you're going through a divorce, dude. I'm gonna pull these cards, I'm instantly gonna start talking about your divorce. Yes, like, I'm not, like,
so,
like,
we're not the personal biases absolutely come in, especially for friends and for yourself too. Like, that's the big one for me. I used to say I can't read my own cards because it's hard for me to, because I know what I'm going through, I know my own situation, so anything I see, right, is gonna be interpreted that way, right? Like, and also the other issue is that a lot of the times we don't give ourselves the same amount of consideration when reading cards that we would with somebody else. Like, how like, I will pull them and I'll look at them and I'll really, like, think about it before I say something. When it's me, I'm just flipping them over and, like, instantaneously, like, putting them back in the deck and being like, no.
You know? Oh, yeah. So, like, no. So the thing is, I feel like when I read for myself, or that's usually when, I mean, it's the strongest, because the way that I utilize tarot was not really, like, the way that I read for people.
Right.
It's determining, like, what is, you know, what is the will of God? What are the spirits saying? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like I'm just, like, throwing it up into the aether, and I'm, like, extracting order out of the chaos, basically.
Right. But that's exactly, you can't figure out how to do that really without all the other stuff, you know?
Yeah. Like, so it's like, so usually, like, when I'm reading for myself, I'm not really worried about injecting bias into it, because I can instantly feel when I'm lying to myself.
Oh yeah, I know that too. You know? That's what
when I'm in
that's
why I put when, it when back. I'm in denial, and I, like, see something I don't want to see, and then my brain kicks in and starts, like, you know, maybe, and then I'm like, nope, you're lying to yourself, dude.
Like, that was a bad card. That was just a bad pull. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, no.
I instantly know.
I know, too. That's why I just put them back and pretend like I didn't do it.
Oh, man, I got to stop.
Yeah, you know, like, but I mean, it is, there is something about them. And, I mean, okay, so, like, the art of divination, right?
Yeah.
Is, it's an art form. I guess it's been viewed that way for millennia. Like, it's for since the beginning of time, people have been dividing with whatever they have around them. So stones, sticks, you know, seeds, bones, entrails, all of those things, pendulums, mirrors, water, you know, like, all these things you can divine or scry, which is a form of divination, right? Like, so, and these things are all, you can utilize them. And sometimes maybe you're more drawn to one thing more than the other, but for some reason, tarot is just, it's like this universally applicable tool.
I think of it, yes, it is. I like to think of it in terms of instruments. I think of the tarot as the piano of the occult. Because the thing is, like, piano is the instrument that if you learn piano, you get good at piano, you can play any instrument. Touché. You can pick up any instrument and play it.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about the tarot.
Yeah.
You know, like, my first divination skill was dream divination. Right. And that I developed that out of necessity and it with a secular mindset. It was before I entered magic. And I was just trying to solve these. I was having these, like, really terrible dreams frequently for... It was like, I think it was like 2 years or something.
Yeah.
And so my dream work spurred out of that just as like a natural thing, as like me wrestling with my own brain or whatever. And it wasn't until I looked it up after I'd got it under control that I realized what it was doing, that it was like interpreting dreams and lucid dreaming and that kind of thing. But I never looked at it as an occult skill or magical skill. Like, I had a very like secular mindset about it. Like, oh yeah, like, you know, there's scientists in labs that study it, and it's Jungian dream interpretation. It's all psychology or whatever. Then when I got into magic, I realized, oh, like, I've been divining this whole time. Yeah. But the tarot itself, though, is like the dream divination didn't give me access or understanding to, I guess, what was happening in magic. I guess, like, when you're talking about sympathies and correspondences and all the things that are incredibly important to the Western magical tradition and the Western esoteric tradition, I didn't understand any of that. What the dream divination helped me understand was basically just liminal states and trance states, right?
Right.
Which is incredibly important.
Yes.
An incredibly important skill. But with the tarot introduces you to all of that. Right.
It does.
It introduces you to the symbols. It hones your intuition. It introduces you to a kind
numerology.
Numerology introduces you to transpersonal psychology.
Mm-hmm.
It introduces you to all these different occult skills, and it's all built into this nice little package, right?
Right. Of so, 78 I mean, cards.
It's a great, yes, it's a great way to, you know, it's a great idea to, like, somebody's like, I want to learn magic and know nothing about it. Hand them a tarot deck and be like, learn this.
I think the very first act of divination for most people should be the act of divining what tarot deck to get.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Intuiting.
Like, yes. Yeah. Like, go and just, you know, a lot of places have, you know, sample decks where you can look at them, you know? And it shouldn't be, it should be something you're drawn to. Something that calls to you, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because there's a lot of staple standard decks, right?
Uh-huh.
But and those are good to start to learn with, and that's what you're going to learn with in any magical order you join is going to probably be Rider Waite or something like that.
The gold standard, I guess, like within the modern world, is the Rider Waite deck.
Right.
I'm personally a fan. I'm so hypercritical of Aleister Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think best work, and like I give him complete props for it, is his work on the tarot.
Yeah,
I think the Thoth Tarot is incredibly amazing, because I think what makes Aleister Crowley a weak magician is that he's too much of a systematizer, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes his magic kind of weak. But that's exactly what you want in a good tarot.
Yes.
You want a bunch of different correspondences. You want a bunch of different influences brought into one deck. And that's why I like Thoth-based or Thoth-descendant decks. I think the Hermetic Tarot. Though.
Oh my gosh, I love the Hermetic Tarot. Like that one,
we both love the Hermetic Tarot. Yeah,
I mean, I love that one for many reasons, but you know, it works really well.
Yeah, it's symbol dense. The Hermetic Tarot is the one, like, that's my magical deck. That's those are the cards that make it onto the altar when I'm trying to use the tarot as a mandala. You know, those
are the ones I use when I have like darker clients.
Yeah.
It tends to be able to kind of sort out like more dense energy for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know why that is, but I just, whenever I have a client, and I do this, I like will sit and I'll, right before I read for somebody, I'll sit and I'll think, what deck am I going to use?
Yeah.
And then one will come to mind and that's one I use. And it's, you know, always the right one. And it's one of those things where it's like, you should pick a deck that calls to you, that you feel like you're going to resonate with, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, your method of meditating on it.
Yeah.
Did that include like pulling it in the morning, looking at it, kind of thinking about what you think it means or whatever, and then trying to see, like, at the end of the day, trying to look back and see if that energy showed up in your day or not, or how did you do it?
No, so it was about 20 minutes a day, and I worked through the deck in sequence. Mm-hmm. I would start, I would take the card, and it's like, okay, today's about this card or whatever. I would read the little, like, what it's supposed to be, mm-hmm. right? What it says in the booklet.
Yes.
And then I would look at the image on the tarot deck, and then I would close my eyes and I would try to hold the image in my mind. If I lost the image, I would try to reconstruct it with visualization, like the symbols that I remembered. And now this might sound very, very complex. It really wasn't. Like, I was brand new to magic. So yeah. It's like, you know, like somebody's like, oh, I don't know how to visualize, I don't know how to meditate. And it's like, dude, just sit down and do it, you know?
Yeah.
You
know? Unless you have
FFP. It's like, if you sit down and do that, by the time you get to the end of the deck, you'll be able to visualize and you'll be able to understand the symbols from memory because you've been reconstructing them through visualization.
True.
And then not only that, when you're in the meditative state, you're unlocking your own gnosis as those symbols are coming up. I mean, you're learning a shit ton of magic in that very simple practice, right?
Yeah.
Especially like using those symbols, visualizing those symbols. When you're doing that tarot exercise, you're doing it with the intention of learning the card, but what you're really learning how to do by visualizing these symbols and drawing these symbols is like actual real powerful magic.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that in now psychology uses it too.
Yeah.
As a tool. Like a lot of transpersonal psychologists will utilize tarot.
Yes.
And
yes.
their practice with their patients that are having trouble kind of understanding why things are happening,
yeah,
when it's really obvious to the therapist why it's happening, you know, it's a way to kind of give it over to the client because
it
you
also
know,
adds a layer of separation
too. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You hand it to the client, and like the client now has to
because they're
free associate. You
can't really say what they think.
Okay,
you know?
And a therapist is not there to answer your problems for you or fix your problems. The goal of a good therapist is to get you to come to the realization of what the issue is, right?
Yeah.
They'll like walk you through it, but they are not supposed to give you the answer because you're supposed to come to it on your own because it takes away your power if they give it to you, right? And you didn't really learn anything. So tarot is a way to kind of hand it over to the client and be like, here you go.
Yeah.
You know, and now we're going to work through these and like see what comes up.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing how that's become more standard practice these days because it's, you know, it's been very taboo within any kind of medicine.
I can imagine. You know, obviously amongst therapists or the young crowd or whatever, you know, I'm sure they never had a problem with using the tarot, but I can imagine like 20 years ago, just your regular client that walked in.
Oh,
and
no.
You were like,
are you serious?
Hey, like, let's use the tarot. Like, get that devil shit away from me. You know?
I can attest to this. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had, and oddly enough, I've had clients that come to me for tarot readings that are offended by the tarot.
Why?
Like, when they get there, they're like, oh, you're doing that? Like, what the hell did you expect me to, what?
Yeah.
Like, I'm so, that was really confusing for me. Like,
yeah.
I used to work for a hotline, you know, psychic hotline. And sometimes the people on the other end of the line were not aware somehow that it was tarot. And they would be calling a psychic. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that was okay. But as soon as they heard cards shuffling in the background over the phone, right? Because it was back in the day. They would be like, what are you doing? Oh, I don't want to use tarot. That's against God. Whatever, you know. And it's like, What you're calling? Where did you just call? Like, and paid money with your credit card to what? It was very confusing. But yeah, they do have this connotation of like evil to some people, even though the Catholic Church has never said so. In fact, they've said the opposite, right? They, when they first assessed the tarot deck, they looked at the devil card and they said it was a prayer card to pray about keeping evil away.
That's a powerful card. Yes.
Yeah.
I love the devil card. And the thing is, for those that don't have a lot of exposure to the tarot, it is this writing card because it's got literally Satan on it.
Yes, it does.
But
or a depiction of a
yeah, but it doesn't take much investigation or much time with that card to understand what it's really about. And I have a spirit. I feel personally like there's certain cards that I'm like incredibly connected to, yeah. Right? That I absolutely love. And the devil is one of them. Like I have a large devil card that I like to keep as a piece of artwork, and it's kind of like, to me, a symbol of my humanity, you know. And the thing is, like, that card, it represents kind of like the animal quality of like what it means to be human.
Mm-hmm.
It represents like our ignorance and our behaviors and our attachments to our behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And how we're kind of slaves to it, right?
Yeah.
But you know, that's, I'm not the type of person, I'm not the type of spiritualist that thinks that the world is bad and the material world is bad. And so to me, that card is like a reminder of my humanity, you know?
Right.
And it's like, I can be on the spiritual path and I can seek higher and divine things, but I'm still human and
right.
I am lucky to be a human. You know, being a human is
purpose.
You know, it is the purpose, right?
Yeah, it's
it
the
is
lesson.
The purpose, right?
Yeah, it
you
is.
You are the envy of the spirit world. They all want to get in your body.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, have you ever thought about that? Like, yeah. Why is that?
Yeah.
Because you get things.
Well, I
by
know
being
why.
A human,
I mean, yes, that, it's called emotion. Like, yeah. There is none of that on the other side. There is not. Like, I remember
you get the opportunity to cultivate very human virtues, stuff like compassion, humility. Like that kind
that
of stuff.
That are missing.
That are completely missing in the spiritual hierarchy.
It's like
an angel is not
nice.
Humble.
No.
Is not.
They're not nice. They're not.
It's
not like,
care
oh,
much.
Come here. Let me
it's
cuddle
like,
you. Yeah.
It's like,
no.
It's like a flaming bulldozer.
Yeah. yeah. And they don't understand why we're the way we are at all. Like,
no.
And that's so interesting. But I know because when I was on the other side, I realized that I didn't have any emotion at all, like not even about my family and stuff, like it was like, oh, you know, like it's fine, and that was bothering me like so much. And then I realized, oh my gosh, it is about experiencing and mastering emotions, right?
Yeah.
And one of those things, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily an emotion, but it would be like, you know, self-doubt or the feeling of separateness, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's kind of like I think that's one of the most difficult things about being human. I mean, if you think about it, you know, there is a very small minority of people that are called to the spiritual life, you know, the people that become monks, mystics, magicians,
sure.
Whatever the hell it is, you
mm-hmm.
know, and how long does it take them to get to the point where they're like, oh, like this is what, and to start waking up and remembering, right?
That's the goal, like, right? That's the goal.
That's the goal. How
that
long
is like the goal of all the magical orders and practice, right? Is to remember.
Yeah. And so like what, like how long does it take for a person in their lifetime to get there? And then how long does it, like once they get to the point, they're like, oh, this is what I need to be doing. I need to be like remembering what the hell I am. How long does it take them to get to the end? And a lot of them, you know,
I don't know that you ever like, do until you're on the other side, because
until you're on the other side and they're like, hey, like, you're still not, you didn't get enlightened that time.
No, nope.
Time to go back.
Not falling
you know?
For that crap. Nope.
You're
not again.
Again.
No, that's a trap. Absolutely.
I'll
not.
Come right back. Dude. I'll get up there. Like, when's the next run?
You're
Let's go.
Insane.
Yeah.
No, like, no, thanks. But yeah, it's about knowing thyself, right? That's what they will say.
Yeah.
And we hear it, like we all get it, the intuition that guides divination or, you know, intuiting things. We all have it to some degree,
mm-hmm.
you know, like we were talking last night about, you know, detectives, right? That's a huge,
detectives,
very
yeah.
big field of, you know, a career field that's just filled with predominantly men that will never call themselves psychic,
never call themselves psychic.
But they have hunches.
See the first time you pointed that out to me, I remember like how I stopped in my tracks, like, dang, dude, like that 100%.
Do you remember there was a show called Magnum PI?
Yes.
Okay, So I used to watch that with my Nana as a kid because she was like in love with Tom Selleck or whatever.
I'm in love with Tom Selleck. He's so hot, right? I know.
And
there's this, I'm sorry, I got derailed a bit. There's this woman who has a blog where she goes and she picks out every outfit that Tom Selleck wore in Magnum PI and then reassembles the links so you can buy his outfit.
Oh, nice.
And her goal is to get more men to dress like
I mean,
Tom
he was
Selleck
super manly, right?
Yeah.
But his whole, like, well, I watched that as a kid and even as a teenager, even as a young adult, right? Yeah. On like reruns and stuff. It wasn't until I came across it again very recently, like within the last 5 years, that I realized this show's about a psychic. Yeah. He's psychic in the show. That's what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
And it talks about his time in Vietnam and the trauma that he suffered and all of the death he saw and how since they've come back, all of those guys, you know, his friend with the helicopter and his other friend that's like kind of like the Playboy guy, whatever, like the promoter dude, you know,
yeah.
I can't remember his name, but like that they all share that. That's why they're still friends. And the, all the time, every time he's on a case, like that guy Higgins, right? The guy that has the big mansion or whatever he is. He knows that about Magnum. And so he's getting him to go on these, you know, cases to channel this energy that otherwise is causing him trauma.
Yeah.
So, and that's what it's about. And then I was like, what? And then I started
then
to listen.
You just projected that onto every single detective.
Yeah. No, no. But I mean, I'm saying that that
all
show.
All detectives are Magnum PI.
That show comes about because that's actually a thing.
You know?
And so that show was very subtle. Like I didn't, like I said, I watched it for like decades. Right. And then it wasn't until now, like last 5 years, that I was watching it and hearing him have, like, you know, he narrates it and he's talking about these hunches he's having and this information he's getting and he can't explain where it comes from, but he just knows it. And so he goes to that place and there's the person doing the bad act or whatever and like catches them. And so I was like, dang, you know, like, I can't believe I missed that. I think a lot of people missed that actually about that show. And, but I know for certain that this is a thing within the detective community because I actually have a connection for one of my positions as a professor. And I do workforce readiness and I have my career workshops. I bring people in from the community to talk to my students.
Yeah.
And one of those people that I bring in is a sheriff's deputy who's now a detective or retired now, but, and a firefighter also, both of them. I forgot to mention that to you. The firefighter also, who's an investigator, a fire investigator, he also has hunches that he's had for since he can remember. But I had the sheriff's deputy in my classroom last semester, and I, as he's talking and telling the stories of catching these people, afterwards when he was done, I was like, "How long have you known you've been psychic?" And he's like, you know, just like, he's like, "Well, I would never call it that, but you know, I've always known things like other people don't know." He's like, "My wife's the only one that I ever talked to about it." Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, "Well, there has to be, there's tons of you." He's like, "Yeah, we'll never talk about it." Like,
yeah, of course.
We all know.
Yeah.
We never call it that, you know, because the minute you call it that,
exactly.
Credibility out the window.
Yeah.
But he definitely divulged that. Yes. Like, and he was kind of a little.
That's probably why law enforcement's a little like pretty okay with working with like psychics too.
Well, some of them are and some of them are not. Like some of them are, and the ones that probably can do that stuff like themselves, and they don't really know what it is. Like, so I think a lot of them just think it's a hunch.
Yeah.
They don't get that it's, you're getting information and you're hearing it.
Yeah.
So for some reason, for whatever reason, their filter's down, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're able to hear it. And what better way to do that than to, you know, what better way to use that skill than to like solve crimes?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I mean,
everybody loves a crime solving psychic, dude. Everybody loves it.
And there's many, like, you know, I mean, the government uses them for lots of things, you know.
Yeah.
Remote viewing is a kind of form of divination, you know, because you're trying to find out where something is without knowing where it is. And like, there's all different types. There's telemetry, right, where you touch something and you try to pick up energies and figure out what happened.
Yeah.
That's all a way of hearing the energy or the information from a source that you're not supposed to hear from, right? So, again, like, if you can do tarot, once you get this and you're able to actually use it in a way that's beneficial to you, like in a real way, you can probably do a lot of other things at that point.
Yeah. So it's usually like mastering the tarot is one of the first things that you do before you get to start,
they call it doing the some keys, more complex right?
stuff. Yeah.
The keys. Yeah. Once you have the keys, you can use them.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, it's definitely helpful. And
I personally have spent a lot of time like deprogramming myself from all the
definitions,
the correspondences that we use in the tarot. But I think that comes with time. I think it's important at first. And then you kind of like
start
to realize like, I don't really need like, the symbols here aren't what's important. What's important is that I'm intuiting a message.
Right. But symbols are the language of the universe, right? Like symbols and numbers. So that spans across all cultures, all languages, right? So they're, again, the key to like unlocking that ability in yourself that you already likely possess.
So symbols, but symbols are like images of the forms. Or in
images young, of it, things, yeah, like yeah, they're concepts.
They're images of the forms, and that's in Plato speak. In Jungian speak, it's images of the archetypes, right? So like the image is a reflection,
right?
It's not an actual thing, which is why the symbols can be deviant. But what's important is how the symbols relate to each other, the relationships that they have with each other. Because it's the relationships between the forms and the archetypes that the experience is able to be discerned.
Right.
And it's not just divine, but also able to be manipulated how you relate to it, right? You can see that relationship. So the symbols aren't necessarily the most important thing. The name of the god isn't necessarily the most important thing.
It's the overall.
It is the form. It is the archetype and its relationship to the other ones. And the thing is, like, they're all related to each other. They all have relationships with each other.
Right.
And what you're doing when you're divining is you're looking at what relationship is present
what energy
at that moment.
At the moment. Yeah. At that moment. That is it. That is key. Yes.
Yep. So I think we're going to take a quick little break. We're going to start doing these now, guys. We're going to do little breaks.
Yeah. And, you know, share pedal our wares. No.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick little break. We will be back to discourse in a moment. Thank you.
We are taking a quick break from the Discourse podcast and we'll be back shortly. Be sure to check out Dr. Anna Stone's personal website where you can reach her for divination bookings at stoneesoteric.com. Now we return to discourse.
Welcome back from our break. We're on our episode about divination right now. You wanted to take us away with a little bit of insight, right, Dr. Stone?
So there's a couple things that I think when you're new to divination and specifically with using the tarot that you should look out for some of these like so-called traps, right?
Yeah.
Of the beginner. And I think like the biggest one, the most common one and the hardest to overcome would be the self-doubt about what you're getting.
Oh.
You know, you have someone come and it doesn't even have to be someone that you know. It could be a total stranger, but you offer to read for them and they, you know, a lot of times you'll get something like, you know, oh, I don't have a question, just whatever you see or something. You know, that's a difficult one for most people, but, you know, you pull the cards out and you look and I mean, everybody's going to have this happen where they're just like, they get something and they think that can't be what it is, you know, or I'm not doing this right. And you get too much in your head and you don't just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you say something else that you rationalize, right? And then it's not right. But you find out that the original thing that you thought about was right, you know, and it's really hard to get over yourself like that and to just let yourself kind of speak to whatever you're actually hearing or getting, right? because this is not spirits giving this to you. I doubt very much. I'm not sure. But I do know that it's definitely a stream of consciousness that you're tapping into.
Yeah.
Whether that's from a spirit or from the collective, I don't know.
Well, because I use it to, like, let's say I do a ritual or whatever, mm-hmm. and I close it out. And just as, like, I walk away from the ritual, and I'll just, like, throw in my head the name of the spirit. And I'll be like, all right, you know, what you got for me or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I take that as, like, oh, yeah, like, this is just, like, his final message.
Okay, that's still coming from your understanding of it, right? Because you're the one that's interpreting it.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the most important thing about divination, and that's what we're really looking at. The power of divination, it comes from the interpreter. It's the...
Yeah, the cards mean...
It's the ability for the person to drop the filter, to throw, and, you know, whatever we're divining with, we're using as, like, kind of matrices on a chaos matrix or whatever, and we're touching on those matrices that are within ourselves, right? Like, we're having we're eliminating this barrier between us and what's going on around us, right?
Yeah.
And we're dropping the filter in that moment. And so, like, that's where the power of divination comes from.
Right.
So I remember when I first started divining, I used to think that they were like, oh, there's spirits moving around the cards or something like that. And it's like, I mean, you can use divination to communicate with spirits and deity if you so choose.
Right.
However, you know, what you're able to get out of it is 100% dependent on who's looking into the cards.
True.
Right.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people also, maybe not a lot, but a few people will at least discover that when they start to use, a form of divination, tarot or whatever, that they discover that they have some mediumship abilities, because it does open the door for that.
Lubricates.
Yeah. The hinges. Yeah. Like it definitely, helps you kind of get outside of yourself and, you know, channel that stream of consciousness that's accessible if you're open to it. Right.
Yeah.
So it helps you to kind of, it's like, if you're colorblind and then you put on a pair of glasses, it lets you see color.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, you know? I think it was always there, but you just weren't able to see it.
Yeah. I think my biggest struggle, I mean, you said the you know, biggest hurdle or trap of divination for beginners or whatever is going to be self-doubt. For me, it was being too rigid in my thinking.
That's what I mean.
Like, I was so absolutely dependent on structures and formulas and things needed to make sense. And I mean, it got me to a certain point where I could technically read the cards. However, my readings were always like, I mean, it felt like if ChatGPT was giving you a reading, you know, like it was just soulless. And or like if you go on an astrology website and then you read your horoscope, it's like those was what my readings were, because the way I was so rigid in, oh, well, this symbol means this and this card's in this position or like that kind of thing. And so this is going to be the case. And when I was finally able to just, there's this like, when you're training your intuition, there's this brief millisecond of like gut reaction. I know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so quiet and it's so short when you're dull, right? And the thing is, through the repeated practice, and you learn how to recognize that millisecond, and it gets louder and it gets longer, and then you're able to like really just like throw the cards down, and it's like it doesn't matter what position they're in. Yep. It doesn't matter, you know, like let's say you throw 9 cards down and 5 of them make a lot of sense to you, and then there's these 4 floating over here, but in your gut decision you're like, oh, those 4 don't mean anything, those 5 are where the reading's at, you know?
That could be valid. Absolutely. I mean, I know I still struggle with this. I've been reading cards for 34 years, and I have this happen to me all the time. This last weekend, I had a client that came to me, and he just said, I want to know what's going on. And I pull cards, and I'm like, that, this is not, this can't be right, you know? And I said it out loud. But now I know better.
Yeah.
So I say it out loud and I say, this can't be right. This can't be what I'm getting right now.
Yeah.
Because if I did that in my head, they wouldn't know what I'm doing, right?
Yeah.
So I say it out loud and then I pull more cards and I still am seeing the same thing. And I'm like, this, no way. Like,
yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, I got to say it because I see it. Right now, do I feel like an idiot during this moment? Absolutely. Every time, because what I'm about to say is so ridiculous, you know, like something that like I can't believe is going to leave my mouth. Right.
Yeah.
And I'll say it like I did this weekend. And it's some literally like fantastical kind of thing. And then the person on the other side goes, oh, my God, that's exactly what's going on right now. Here's this whole thing. And then it goes into the spiel about someone doing magic on them and all this stuff. And like, and I'm just like, what? Like, because it's still, to me, it's like, first of all, of course, validation. But it's so crazy. And if I didn't allow myself to walk through it and say, this can't, you know, out loud, if I had let myself keep that in my own head and not shared it, I would have ended up putting those cards away, pulling more cards, and like probably having to go through that a couple more times because it would have still kept coming up because I'm at that point now where it's going to just keep showing up for me. Right. But, it's hard sometimes because the things you see may not be something you're expecting.
Yeah.
Or it may be something, and this is very common, at least for the people I read for, the thing that they're asking about is not what comes up. Mm-hmm. It's some other thing, but that other thing is far more important to deal with than what they wanted to know.
Yeah.
And no way you could have known about it because they didn't bring it up.
Yeah.
But yet you still are able to bring it up. And that is like when I think real benefit comes to the client because they're coming there probably for some more mundane kind of question and, you know, or understanding. And then you are able to give them something that you could not have known about. And then that helps to kind of perpetuate the whole spirituality thing because now you have a client who's sat across from you and you've told them something that they haven't told anyone, or at least not you, about. Maybe they've been putting it off to deal with it or something, you know what I mean? And like, and now they're like, oh my God, how the hell did that just happen?
Mm-hmm.
And then for you, you get the validation of like, oh my gosh, even when it seems insane, like it still was what this person needed to hear, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of forms like this circle of like benefit, reward, effort kind of, you know, like thing. And for both parties.
Uh-huh.
So I think it helps to perpetuate like and solidify in people's minds that, think these things are real, you know? Yeah. And you need to be able to get feedback from people, like, and you need to be able to accept when you're not correct, right? And then also you need to know that sometimes you are right and the person just doesn't know it.
Yeah.
That happens a lot too.
Yeah.
And like, what I mean by that is that you say something to them and they say no, because they have another question on their mind.
Yeah.
And then later they end up contacting you and be like, oh, I know what you meant, you know? So yeah. Sometimes people's memory is a little hazy about certain things, but it's definitely a way to strengthen any kind of mediumship abilities you have. It helps put you in a state of kind of trance at a point, right? When you get past the rigid thinking you're talking about, when you start to just let the messages come in and not be so stuck on, oh, this card position means this part, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Then yeah, you can start to get a lot more in depth and very meaningful readings than if you're sticking by the book. But you do need to know those basic, that foundational kind of way that they're used, and also the little booklet definitions.
Yeah.
Because that's how they were designed. And that's like that's the springboard. You know? Yeah. That's just the starting point. Right? Like, I mean, every card has a set meaning to it, right? But it also doesn't. It doesn't. It's like you can, depending on how it's laid out, like what you're seeing, it could mean something different for this client than somebody else. So for this situation in your life, than that situation in your life, right?
Yeah.
You know, like the death card, you know, for instance.
Yeah.
People get scared of that a lot.
Another banging card.
Yeah. I love that card. Love it.
Yeah.
The death card is, you know, yeah, it can mean someone's going to die. Can. Very rare. Yeah. Is that what it means? I think I've had it happen like twice ever. But mostly it's about change or it's something
for me,
ending.
Yeah. I mean, especially like the type of magic that I do, that card to me is like the next chapter in the book. You know, it's always like, it's almost like a new beginnings card for
me. That's
what
it is.
Yeah, exactly. Like I see that card and I'm like,
yes.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God, we're stepping on up, you know?
Yeah. The card I don't like, but I also have a very close relationship with would be the Tower card.
The Tower, yeah.
Yeah, because that one means.
I don't think I think I've got it once personally. Ooh. Reading Unlocked. Got it.
Oh, wow. You had some.
Like right before I met you, I was, I had a reading from a Guatemalan witch and she gave me a tower and it was right before I met you. And you know what happened
right before
I met you.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But that's the only time I've ever got a tower.
So, yeah. I got a tower for you. Yeah. No, you got a tower.
You got a tower for me?
I sure did.
Oh, when was that?
In your past.
Oh, in
the
my
first,
past?
The time I read for you when I first met you.
Oh, okay.
It was like, it was like that. And then there was the devil card. It was like a pretty...
Well, yeah, the devil card's very accurate for that situation.
Mm-hmm. It was like that, the devil, and there's something, I can't remember. I wrote it down. I did in my... but it, you know, I didn't know anything about your situation at the time, but I do now, and now I'm like, yeah, that was...
Yeah, I was wrapping up an initiation right there.
And it was a hanged man was one of them.
I missed that, because when, like, this woman actually taught me how to scry. I always struggled with crystal scrying.
Same thing.
She taught me how to do it, but I missed that because this was during my lunar initiation, and that period of my life was like, so like dark and mystical.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like a bad darkness. It was like
No, I know what you mean.
Like, yeah. It's like a folksy, dark, mystical fantasy. Dark, like that was the vibe of my life at during that period. I miss it because everything was just so whimsical or whatever. But I'm notorious. I'm always talking crap on swords. Those are the ones that I don't like.
Oh, I love them because they're about intellect and like cutting through bullshit.
They're all bad.
No, they're not.
I do not like swords.
They're not all
Most
bad.
Most of them are bad.
Mostly. I mean, the Two of Swords is not bad.
I like cups. I'm a cups guy.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cups, of course. I like wands.
There's a joke we used to make is that cups are friends, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess, but not all of them are, you know? Like, they're not
I think
all.
There's like...
There's a few.
There's two. I think it's like five and six.
No, six is about remembering from the past.
But one of the... Oh, is it seven, the one that's empty?
Seven. Yeah. Five,
Where it's
seven...
Like all, yeah.
Yeah, they're all spilt over. It's like you have too much going on. Eight of cups, too.
Four cups
is like
can be bad.
Four of cups, it's like apathy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like just being like, eh.
Not.
Eh, don't care.
Not appreciating what you got.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But then ten of cups is like, you got all of them.
Dude, ten of cups is like, I mean, in terms of like magical success, I always take ten of cups as like, you know.
Well, I actually, while we were talking, I asked, like, okay, since you talked about spirits, like, what the spirits have to say? I was like, okay, what do the spirits have to say about us? Like, what's going on with us? And I got nine of cups. So, almost there. Yeah. Like,
cups
almost there.
Are friends, dude.
These ones are good.
I feel like every time I get a cup, I'm always like, yes.
Yeah.
You know?
I got nine of cups. So, this is about, like, being a fat cat and having your, like, you know, all the things that you want. Like, you know, just kind of being, like, celebrating in your abundance or whatever, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but it's only after the trials and tribulations of the five cups.
What about there's other divination methods we like to play around with other than tarot,
sure,
right?
Yeah,
so me personally, I'm a dream diviner, but we've already done a whole episode on that. But you like to whip out the pendulum
and the divining rods.
We love the divining rods.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
They are spooky as hell. Yeah,
they are a little spooky. I just got a new set. I told
they
you.
They are
you,
so
you
spooky.
You saw the new set, right?
It's so funny because we'll have full on conversations with spirits.
Yeah.
But then we'll have the divining rods out and then they'll like start pulling with like,
yeah,
like,
it's
like, get the heebie-jeebies or
because it's crazy. Because it's like I'll be like, okay, point to where you are, and they'll just immediately both go like and point to a part of the room where
it's
we already thought
answers,
something was weird there anyway, right?
Because I don't the binary divination always freaks me out.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because yeah. there's no tone to it, right? Like, if it's a yes or no,
yeah,
there's no tone to it. So everything is ominous to me.
Yeah.
Like, every time I ask a question and I get, like, a yes or a no, it doesn't matter if it's positive or not. I'm going to take it in an ominous way because it's, like, binary, you know? Like, there's no tone to it.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I mean, like, that's kind of like with pendulum, too.
Yeah.
But with the pendulum, it's the violence and with from which it like spins, you know, like you can tell yeah. like how
if oh it's yeah thick. Yeah
because it you know I've used a pendulum once where I you know had my hand rest my elbow resting and like was holding my wrist with my other hand and it's like going in a circle and then it literally just stops mid
yeah
and goes in the other direction and I'm just like okay man like cool that and it does kind of freak me out because yeah. There's times where you can feel a pull yeah. on it and you're like where's that coming from? Uh-huh. But the divining rods, definitely.
Yeah.
And we know they work.
But yeah, I always have, I have fun when we pull them out.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it, you know, it spooks me, but it's also like fun, you yeah. know? Well, whereas like, there's definitely like other things that are just like plain spooky.
I'm yeah. Like I'm not touching I'm a Ouija board.
Yeah. Like the Ouija board. I don't care
if it's
Hollywood hype. Yeah, I'm not gonna do it.
No, I had an experience with one of those, yeah. and it was not fun. No, and it was really scary, and it was like out of a movie. And I unfortunately know that it wasn't my friends pranking or anything because they yeah. didn't know the person we were contacting. Uh-huh. Only I did.
Yeah,
and they so the answers that I got from that uh-huh. were not. It was bad. It was bad. And then the stupid planchette like went off the board after we weren't. It was bad. And it was terrifying. And Erica and Monica, if you guys see this, you know what I'm talking about. Like we were all in high school and it was like, really scary. And I never touched it again in my life. I was like, no, absolutely not. It was mean and negative. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. Like it was just, it had a really ominous negative vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I literally had thought this is nonsense. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, like they've been around for a long time for a reason, yeah. you know, I don't know what it is about them that seems to attract negative. I do know. Huh. I just heard what it is. Oh my gosh.
What?
I just got it in my head right now.
What is it?
Oh my God. So the spirit board is the only thing that doesn't use the person as a channel.
What?
It doesn't use the person as a channel. Like it's using the board as a channel instead of the person.
Oh.
So it's using an object that has no like ability to protect itself.
Oh, got it.
It's using a like what I just saw was that it's. I can't even put it in words.
I'm trying to think, there's got to be divination. Oh, because it's filtered through people.
It's not. It's yeah. It's filtered yeah. through people. So if you're somebody that's open, you can not accept that. You know what yeah. I mean? You can hear like a negative thought and just ignore it, right? But a
yeah.
board can't do that. It's just a board.
Yeah.
And it's not using the people's like actual internal processes. It's using their, you know, electromagnetic energy to move the thing, right? So it has nothing to do with being filtered through somebody that can discern that it's bad or good.
Interesting.
Like that's, it's really hard to put it into words, but what I just saw was like, I can't even describe it, but I just saw like the difference between a person doing it and a board doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it does, that's the difference. Is it? It's like free reign. Anything can come through.
Huh.
Whereas with the person, it not anything can come through.
Yeah.
Not just anything can, unless that person's really damaged or something, you know.
Yeah.
So, wow. I'm gonna have to write that down after this.
Yeah.
What I just saw. That's crazy. Yeah. See, this is what happened.
This is what happened.
Like you get random vision because I just literally snapped out for a second and saw that, and even though I'm sitting right here, like I just saw it like as a scene in my head that blocked out everything else.
Yeah,
that was crazy. So yeah, that's why. And I know for sure I'm not ever touching it ever.
No,
for sure.
I know for sure.
No, yeah, but there's lots of different things you can do. I mean, there's you know, countless. It's too many to even name. But tarot's one that if you can do it, you can do all the rest of them pretty much.
Yeah,
with some maybe a little learning curve, but not much.
What the rest of divination? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think tarot is like extremely comprehensive. It's like it'll. I think tarot is more useful for like if you're planning on getting into magic, right? But if you're just focusing on divination, scrying is a really good like that's because tarot's not going to teach you how to scry. Scrying is very is way more dependent on the trance state than tarot is, right?
I don't know.
Tarot's like what? What do you mean you don't?
I don't know. I mean, it's just really easy for me to do that.
But yeah, and then I mean, obviously, you got to talk about the I Ching, which is like that's its own comprehensive system. If you learn tarot, you're not going to understand the I Ching.
No,
the method, the technique behind it, as in like you're intuiting and you're extracting order from chaos, mm-hmm. like messages from chaos, order from chaos, and there's like some kind of a relationship that you have with the divination. That's similar, right? But it's not like, oh, like I learned all the symbols in the tarot, so I should understand the Chinese.
No, I mean, I guess you could over time. There's literally only so many hexagrams you can come up with, right? But it's the way that they're ordered.
There's a lot.
So it's like DNA. It's like DNA, right? Yeah. There's only four, base pairs, right? Like there's only four nucleic acids that form the base pairs.
Yeah.
Right. Well, five technically, but okay. But the combination of them within the helix, right, makes it for infinite possibilities. So mm-hmm. the hexagram is kind of similar. Yeah.
That's kind of the conclusion I got when I was like looking at primary sources with Heklo and Merkabov mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at some of those books, it is absolutely nuts. They're just like strings of letters. It looks like a printer test or something. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a printer test where it's just a large string of numbers or something.
So I know
that's what the Heklo and Merkabov primary sources do. And like looking at it and then like looking at it with like Kabbalistic eyes, you know, as in like these guys are like literally extracting, mm-hmm. like this is like a chaos matrix of alphanumericism that they're extracting messages from or whatever.
I haven't seen it. Yeah. I haven't seen this, but I'm gonna have feeling to like what it looks like is like a ticker tape of just data coming out.
It looks
and
like
the person
it, yeah.
is like scanning that, looking for things that stick out to them.
Yeah.
And then the next thing that sticks out and the next thing that sticks out and those things are all going to be grouped together to make a message.
Yeah. I mean, so within Kabbalists, which is downstream of Merkabah and Heklo, Kabbalists do permutation where they're like, so, I mean, I don't know what the exact technique that they were using was, but definitely knew that, like, I mean, they could be scanning, they could be doing gematria, or they could be doing permutation, where it's like, if you permute every single one of these letters in the sequence, you're like coding something.
Yeah, it's a code, because we're all in a simulation.
Not sure exactly what it is, but
it's the code.
Yeah. There's like one section where it was like literally just a string of YHV, which the three letters of the of the tetragrammaton or whatever,
right?
It just in a bunch of different. It reminded me of looking at a like DNA? You were saying DNA, yeah,
right? The ATCG.
It was like YHVHHHYHVH.
Exactly. That's
like,
what is.
And this is like a whole book of it. You know,
the same thing as like our genetic code. Yeah. It's code. It's code. And it's like, if you can read the code, you have the secrets to the universe.
Jewish magic is nuts, man. Like that's why I love it so much. Like it's just. You see these guys in the first century doing this, and you're like, how?
Because they had primary source from source, like
they
somehow.
Had source.
Yeah. I mean, that's what my old professor literally told me.
Yeah.
I asked, I one day in my consciousness program, I said, okay, we have all these ancient texts, right? Where the hell did they get this information? Is it like the gods actually spoke to them and like in person or however? And like, and my professor goes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just so absolutely matter of fact. And I was like, seriously? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, what happened? He goes, we're people and we're idiots. And we did exactly the opposite of what we're supposed to do with that stuff. So they stopped. And
so
now it's
I
just being handed down.
I used to make a pretty hard line statement that there's only two examples on the written record when deity like physically descended down to earth and spoke directly to man, and it was to Moses on Mount Sinai and in the battle of the Bhagavad Gita,
mm-hmm.
when Krishna
Yeah.
Krishna came down.
I mean, that's, yeah, yeah. There's, but I think that there's more than that and in different.
It's just not in writing.
Well, maybe it is. Because
if you look at every other religion, it's based off of direct, like one person's revelation.
Right. Well, I mean, sure.
Like, so, but Judaism and the Vedic tradition are the only ones where it's like, no, there's like thousands of people that witnessed this happen.
Right. I mean, yeah. Like, so like reports like that. Yeah. Sure. But I think that many people, I think today still happens actually, but just more selectively. And I think that's why some people get information, but what do they do with it? Nothing, you know?
What do you mean?
I mean, I think that a lot of people do get stuff, but even if they did, who's going to believe it these days? We're not in the same days of like of a prophet like Jesus coming around.
I'm telling you, I had somebody like reach out to me randomly online a few days ago, and they were like telling me that, I don't know, you got a vibe or whatever, that whole spiel, and they're like can I like be honest with you, can I open up to you? And they start telling me about how like please don't think I'm crazy, like, but I feel like I get these messages from God or in these visions and that kind of stuff. And I'm just like sitting there and it's like, dude, like talking to occultists, of course I believe you.
I don't believe anybody.
You're not crazy, yeah. Dude.
Oh, I think a lot of people are crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, like,
that's where we are different is that I think 90% of people are full of it when they say stuff like that. And then I do you think that there's 10% that are
somebody's sincere.
Accurate.
Cause I know, like, I've known plenty of the, like, you know, delusional psychosis borderline schizophrenic guys that are running around saying that, like, I am God and I am Satan and I am you know, I've known plenty of those guys, and it's just like, dude, you are just nuts.
Yeah.
But then there's like, you know, you can tell someone is being sincere, and like the thing is, like, I tell people that shit all the time, you know.
What?
It's just you know, I'm always talking to God. I'm always talking to the universe. Yeah, I know. You know?
But I believe you because I've seen
you
it.
You believe me. Yeah.
Because I've seen you do stuff. And,
but
like,
I know how insane
it.
That. I know how insane that sounds.
Yeah, I know.
But
that's why I don't say that to people.
I'm obstinate about how insane that sounds. That's why I say it.
Yeah. You know? No, I mean, I know. I used to care a lot about people thinking I was crazy. I no longer care at all because, you know, if I'm crazy, then I'm doing, you know, I mean, what am I doing, you know, with my life? Crazy people can't really do the kind of things I'm doing. So.
Yeah.
You know, but crazy, know. And there's levels of it. I think you do have to be a little crazy, though.
I think for me, because recently I've been asking, it's like, what's the personal daemon, and what is the will of God, or like, you know, are they distinct things, you know, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I've been asking myself that question a lot lately, but I think that, like, people at least for me personally, when I'm talking about, I'm having this, it, like, I'm talking to the universe, I'm talking to God, like that kind of thing, it's like I'm communicating through what divination taught me, right?
Yeah.
Which is like through my intuitive faculty, through meaningful circumstance, through extracting messages in the chaos. And it's like, that sounds entirely schizophrenic, but
right,
you know,
But the difference
I'm obviously
is,
a composed, stable person,
okay,
right?
You know, the bar, you've said this a million times, is that if you don't ponder the idea that, am I crazy right now? Or is this happening? Then you're probably crazy.
Yeah.
Because people that are not crazy are always questioning what they're getting because it's against the programming we've been exposed to forever. Like, and it's not the norm, right? At least we're told it's not the norm, okay? But, like, you know, so it's hard sometimes to reconcile those things.
Yeah.
And so if you're not asking, did that just really happen? Or am I projecting this out, you know, or something? Then you might be a little off, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you can still ask those questions. And if the answer is not likely, you're probably getting legitimate stuff, you know, especially if you can be verified. Like, that's the big thing, is verification is really necessary, I think, for growth in divination practices.
Well, yeah, no, it's just like, yeah, because, like, you learn in divination to, like, really, like, trust this intuition, right? And how to discern, like, what is coming from
the ego.
That relationship. Yeah, what's coming from your ego, and what is coming from your relationship with the universe around you, right? And then the better you get at discerning that, then it turns into like you start stepping into this like magical lifestyle to where it's like everything is, you are constantly communicating with it, right?
I mean,
exactly. And so it's like you're constantly communicating with it. You're constantly taking direction. Like you're taking the signs. You're taking the little cues. You're like, okay, I'm going to do that. Okay, I won't do that. Hey, that there's the answer. Or, yeah, you know, that's what I asked for yesterday or whatever it is. And you're constantly, you know, I mean, not saying that out loud, but that's how you live your life. And then it becomes this like kind of fluid stream of just like guidance through the universe, you know? And then so... It's like, then what do you call it? Then what do you call that? And I'm like, I'm just talking to God. I'm talking to the universe.
So you're talking about like how, everybody that knows me knows that I talk to myself constantly all day long out loud. Like out loud.
Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about.
I talk to myself and I argue with myself about things.
Yeah.
Like, and I will argue. So if you do this and you find yourself like at odds with yourself about things and like actively arguing with yourself, chances are, you're actually hearing very clearly that stream that we're talking about.
Chances are you haven't taken your meds.
Possibly. I mean, seriously, because I didn't realize that that's what it was. I thought I was just talking to myself, but not the way that it sounds. Like, it's like I'm getting information all day long, every day about things. And it wasn't until fairly recently that I realized that, wait a minute, this is actually not really talking to this version of myself. I'm talking to a different version, and it's giving me information. And the only time it's ever been a problem is when I don't listen to it.
Yeah.
But whenever I listen to it, it's always seemed to got my, you know, have my best interest in mind.
Yes, everything works out. That's the thing. Cause I mean, like for me, like I always tell you, it's like, I don't make decisions for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I like actually mean that. Like I'll like literally call somebody up and be like, hey, what should I do? But, then, but most of the time, like what I'm trying to communicate to people when I say I don't make decisions for myself, it's like I'm literally just like consistently just like, what's the next step? Like what am I doing? You know,
like guide me.
Yeah, exactly. Like I stopped, you know, planning, and it just started like following.
I mean, right? I think that maybe a lot of people will be able to like resonate with this like analogy. Like, have you ever planned a trip, right, that, you know, you're really excited to take? And you plan all the things out, like detail by detail, you know, and then you go on that trip and it sucks. And like everything just, you know, all the kind of.
Like trying to take my kid to the playground.
Exactly.
Trying to plan a like special in your head, day for her.
In your head, you see this lovely like father daughter moment.
Yeah.
And like playing on the swings, whatever it is. Yeah. And like, and then the reality of it is you got.
She's throwing shoes at you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, but then. On the flip side of that is like the times when you just are spontaneous and let like the moment take you where it goes ends up being like the most meaningful and most like fond memories that you have, right? When it's not so planned out because you were in control, you were trying to manipulate a situation and make it adhere to your will of how you wanted it to play out.
Yeah.
And you're going against the flow of the natural flow of things.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I mean, and that's kind of the intersection that we live in as magicians, because like when you're really good at magic, your good magic is like you are kind of like you are invoking the highest will, you know, with the complete understanding that the highest will is actually your will, that's your real will.
Yes.
But so you're constantly like playing this like balancing game of like, you know, I'm gonna do magic, like practical magic, you know. And you like know that it's like you're doing this in your will, you know, and you somehow have to get yourself aligned with the highest will to get your magic to a place where it's like, okay, this is going to work, right? Because it's like you always say, like, if it's meant for you, it's meant for you.
Right. And that's what I always say when I'm doing that kind of stuff is like, if this is what's supposed to happen, then that's going to happen, you know? But if it's you're forcing it, then it's probably going to end up crappy because you're forcing something that's not supposed to be.
I mean, that's when my life stops working. That's when the magic stops working. It's like when I'm like just so like stuck in, you know, things have to happen this way.
Right.
Or I
anxiety
need
takes over because you don't have like anxiety stems from the lack of control, the feeling of not having control.
Yeah.
But the antidote to that oddly enough, is to relinquish control and allow things to just happen as they will.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is terrifying for somebody with anxiety, right? To even think about. But
that's my big battle. It's anxiety. Yeah. That was like my little mental health. When they were sending us down here to Earth and they were handing out things, they were like, here, you get anxiety.
Debilitating anxiety. Yeah, yeah. You're not going to be able to work for a decade. Right? Like, yeah, just have panic attacks all day. Yeah, and nightmares. Night terrors. You can't even get relief in your sleep.
But no, I mean that's the thing. Like, I don't take meds. I don't do shit. I just let go.
Yeah, honestly, I used to be heavily medicated.
I haven't had a panic attack in years.
Me neither.
Dude.
I've had some anxiety, but it's been like healthy anxiety.
Yeah,
and
no,
like
it's like a
circumstantial
normal
anxiety.
Yeah.
Not like I have anxiety for absolutely no fucking reason and I can't get out of bed and
I'm
in a fetal position.
I can't do anything.
And I can't talk and I feel like I'm going to vomit. Like, yeah, no, none of that anymore. And after being on meds for a decade, I have done nothing. And my anxiety is completely normal.
Yeah.
Like normal. Just whatever normal is. Like, it actually can benefit me. Like, I can be nervous and perform
it's
better.
It's a signal that I'm, like, procrastinating or something.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a reason why it's happening. Yeah. It's not like that just unknown impending doom, but I don't know where it's coming from, you know? And that
fucking shit. I was telling you the other day about, like,
impending doom. When people use that term, I know that they have legit anxiety because it is one of those phrases that only somebody that truly has suffered or is currently suffering from anxiety that's really bad knows about. Like, it's like impending doom. It's like, we don't know where it's coming from. But it's, someone's dead. Someone's dying. There's some horrible stuff happening right now.
Yeah, there's some like really, really bad thing. Yeah, because like, I was trying to explain to you why I would get paranoid. Why I used to struggle with paranoia. It was because I would have that feeling of impending doom. And then I would like look around my environment for a target to like place the blame on, you know?
That's so you could have a resolution to it. Like, so you could
like they're after me, you know? Like,
it was really you after yourself this whole time.
It was me. Sometimes it's not about the Hillary Clinton that stole the election, but the Hillary Clinton that stole our sanity.
Yeah,
Hillary Clinton was me the whole time. I stood in the face of the abyss and I stared that devil down. And what I saw was myself looking back.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is you at the end of the day that's causing your own anxiety.
Yeah.
It is.
And Hillary Clinton.
It is. Yeah.
Or well,
bills,
I was Hillary Clinton
or bills.
The whole time. Yeah,
yeah, like bills that weren't expected, stuff like that. Like, you know, anxiety. People are like, "Give me a bill that I'm not expecting. Watch me absolutely devolve into absolute shit."
Dude,
but if there's a catastrophe, I'm your guy. Yeah. Like 100%, I've got this. Like, I was born for this shit. Like, you know, world's ending. You want to come my way, man? I got this. I've been prepared my whole life. But oh my God, the bill's double what I thought it was gonna be. Like, my God, like the most mundane shit, right?
Yeah.
But that's because again, you're like putting your own.
I just get resentful towards bills,
bills,
I don't really feel
and
the
taxes
anxiety.
And government.
Yeah. Yeah, taxes. That's a big one for me. I told you I went through my like little teenage college libertarian phase.
Yeah.
Dude, millennial libertarianism was sick. I wish more people were there for
it. Well, I mean, you know, until we can all afford to revolt, we can't.
We were going to be allowed to do any drug we wanted whenever we wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Darn it. And not pay taxes
and
not have potholes
taxes
in the streets and stuff like that. Yeah.
No, we didn't. No, we weren't concerned with that. We just wanted to sell drugs online. That's what, that's what we're about.
Goals, man. Life goals.
We just wanted free music, free movies, and sell drugs online. That's all we wanted, you know?
Yeah. You know, and you know, I've just wanted to not have to deal with stupid bills that come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like literally.
Yeah, and then I got older, you know.
Yeah,
because
like,
the millennial
I just want my yard to grow.
Really paying a lot of taxes at that point in their life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now.
But then I got older and I'm like, maybe I should look back in that libertarian stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you start to, you know, get preoccupied with what pillows to
I'm
buy.
Sorry. I like made like a few political references during this episode.
I love
this is like
it.
So out of character.
It,
so out of character.
Like, no,
I usually
it is
not
out of character.
Mention,
what are you
I don't mention Paul. Actually, never mind.
You do.
I talk a lot about Hillary Clinton. That's for sure. That's like kind of like my like little thing, you know.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
I think you're in love with her.
Actually. I'm in love with
her. Yeah, that's what I think's happening.
That demon.
Do I have to go
mom?
Beat her ass?
Yeah. Oh my God, dude. This is a woman
Hillary,
of my
stay away.
She is like, okay, like, I don't, you know. Dude, crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, I think that in our queue.
Yeah.
Well, Hillary Clinton has gotten into this conversation and we've got to put a stop to it right now.
I'm sorry for anybody out there offended. So sorry.
Nobody cares about your offense. Okay. I was like, sorry.
No. I need to stop going on Hillary Clinton tangents, dude.
It's all good.
That's crazy. But
I go on like tangents all the time.
I had a bad time. Yeah. I was in. Yeah, no. I was in deep psychosis. Yes.
I've heard. Psychosis. I heard. You know, some things will do that to you. Like, you know, you don't want to.
I don't know what it was about her, but she pushed me over.
We
the
do
edge.
Know what it was about her. You know, but yes, though. But you know, with divination, you could pull cards and. Find out that maybe you're being paranoid.
No. I was doing gematria during that, and that was making it worse. That
was a joke.
Because it was telling me the truth about the situation, and I knew the truth, and that was why I was freaked out. Because
no one would listen. And
nobody would
listen. Can't do anything about it.
I'm like, guys, the airplane. Yeah. Like, shut that flight off. And everybody's like, you're crazy. And then Epstein ends up in jail, and they're like, can you believe it? I was like,
ah! Can I believe it? That's the thing. I gotta say, like, for real, and I'll just throw mine in here too, just to match your energy. When, you know, we had the lockdown, you know, I, as a former microbiologist and virologist, I, you know, looked into it before they, you know, cleaned off the internet of the stuff. And I was like, aha, I found it. And I was telling people, I'm like, you guys, don't worry. They'll have a vaccine soon because they already have it because here's why. And everyone's like, you don't know what you're talking about, Anna. And I'm like, oh, no, don't trust me, the friend of yours that was a microbiologist for the government, virologist, and worked in a lab with viruses and bacteria. Don't look at me. Go to Google Scholar instead. You know, like get your Google PhD and like listen to that stuff. Okay. Everyone said I was crazy.
Yeah.
Then when it actually happened and everything came out about it, everyone's like, can you believe it? And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Don't even. Just don't even. And they act like I never said the shit. Yeah. And I'm like, I hate all of you. Like, you know, when are you guys going to apologize, you know, for like saying I was crazy? Really, guys, seriously, I'm asking. Seriously. Yeah, because I'm fucking told you. Yeah. Like, I mean, I have posts that pop up in my Facebook memories and it's like, here's my post. I'm like, then I will reshare it. And I'll be like, remember this, guys? Like, you know? And I've gotten like two people that have been like, you were right. And I'm like, but that's two out of like a lot. So it's not sufficient in my book. But, you know, you know, tarot wouldn't have helped me with that because I just already had the proof. But like nobody cared.
Yeah.
But for your own safety.
For your own safety, if you choose to engage in conspiracy theories, do not divine on them.
Don't. Because it will likely confirm what you already know.
I'm not going to encourage anybody to engage in
conspiracy. Don't do that.
That's an unhealthy pursuit.
It is very. It's not and that is the other trap. Before we like go, we should talk about the trap of relying too heavily on divination for your life choices or your life events, right?
Yeah.
I have many clients that come to me one time and you know they get their reading from me and like it's good because I'm accurate, right? But then they are hooked on it and they want to come to me all the time. I limit that. I do not let that happen because that can be a form of addiction, a crutch, and a way to kind of subjugate, like you're like to deflect responsibility on situations, you know. Or to see something.
You also start getting disillusioned too.
Yeah, you do. Because if you're like in a bad situation.
Disillusionment is something you really need to watch out for as a magical practitioner because disillusionment will creep in and it will ruin your effectiveness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you're in a bad mindset and you do reading, I don't think you should take those seriously. You need to be clear and like, you know, not burdened with any kind of like if you are in the middle of a breakup or a divorce or, you know, you just lost your job, your tarot readings are probably not going to be the best measure of like what you should do at that time if you're like mentally chaotic. You know what I mean? Because it's going to just be projecting outwards to you what is going on in your head already. Right. So it's going to be feeding that kind of energy, feeding into it. And that's what I've found. Rarely have I ever gotten some like positive cards when I'm in the thick of it, right?
Yeah.
If I do it for myself.
Yeah.
Or even if I've had it done. It's only when you're kind of clear and calm that you can actually get really good information. And also with divining information and it, and like being able to determine intuition from just anxiety or psychosis, the difference would be that, you know, if it comes to you with a feeling of anxiety attached to it or fear, that's not the message to be listening to.
Yeah.
It needs to be just facts, right? Like, and detached, like not something that is going to upset you, right? So, I mean, it could upset you, but not in the way where it's like a panic, you know? Mm-hmm. There's definitely a difference there. But with time, you get used to being able to tell the difference between the two eventually.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's why tarot is so helpful, because it helps you kind of regulate those different streams that you can tap into. One is yourself and your own worldly bullshit. The other one is not, you know?
Yeah.
And you want to make sure you're getting that one, not the former. So, but yeah, divination is important in the occult, and it can also be important for self-development and growth.
Yeah, we got to, so we're going to close out the episode. I think my battery is about to die, so I'm going to wrap it up right now. But anyways, thank you for joining me, Dr. Stone,
or
I guess me joining you. I don't know.
Wait, wait, really, we're in the same house.
Studio. Yeah, we live together now. It's crazy. Yeah. So
it's nuts. Bananas.
Yeah, we got a lot moving forward on the show, so we're really excited for it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Until next time, you guys, you know, be safe.
All right. Thank you.
Bye, guys.
You've been listening to Discourse, where we venture into the mysteries of esotericism, the occult, and the depths of spiritual exploration. I am Abimon the Great, joined as always by Dr. Anna Stone, bringing adept insights to help guide your journey. Remember, the path of wisdom is illuminated by both knowledge and experience. Until next time, continue your exploration and stay attuned to the unseen.